Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Preacher man, don't tell me heaven is under the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's not all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on,
get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Hey, good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up, we've got at 9:30, Fight the Empire with host Per Fogring speaking with investigative reporter Robert Perry about the mainstream media's exaggeration of Russiagate. At 10 today, it's Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it'll be Flashpoints, investigative news radio with Dennis Bernstein. And then at 11, Between the Covers, Dan Johnson today talks with author Craig Johnson about the latest book in his Longmire series, the basis for the Netflix show Longmire. That's all coming up right after we hear from Teresa Mitchell and Press Watch, bringing you the news you're not supposed to know. Stick around.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Calling Home the Dead on Thursday, October 19th at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Calling Home the Dead is a fundraiser for VOZ and KBOO Community Radio that includes music, dancing, a procession of cachinas y cachinas, and delicious Dia de los Muertos pastries and horchata. The film, Calling Home the Dead, will also be screened, showing the Dia de los Muertos traditions of the towns that surround Lake Pátzcuaro in Mexico. Again, that's Calling Home the Dead on Thursday, October 19th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to present David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Journalist, author, and activist David Barsamian will be speaking about the broad coalition in opposition to the Trump administration, which includes activists from a range of causes, progressive Democrats, and concerned Republicans. He'll be reflecting on the core issues at stake today and why so many people from such a range of identities and perspectives are challenging the administration. Again, that's KBOO Presents David Barsamian, Resistance in the Age of Trump, on Sunday, November 12th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me with a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I'm against that manipulation, too. We'll talk about street wars. The Trump administration is aware that it lost the popular vote, and that it must now rule as a minority in the style of the de Klerk apartheid regime in 80s South Africa. To that end, Trump regularly gives dog whistle statements and gestures, i.e. the wall, ICE raids, opposing Kaepernick's gesture, banning Muslims, purging transgender people from the armed forces, etc. Police departments across the nation have reacted with delight and enthusiasm, forming a de facto fighting bloc with the Klan and Nazi alt-Reich types. This is what we're facing now. Courts are fighting back, but Trump has an ace up his sleeve. He can start new wars, most notably and immediately with North Korea and Iran. So the question is, what are we going to do about this? I will be joining Ani Haynes and others speaking on this topic and more this Saturday evening at the Sunnyside Community House, 3520 Southeast Yamhill. The event starts at 7 p.m. It's called Current Wars, New Wars, and Street Wars. And it is sponsored by the Peace and Justice Works Iraq Affinity Group. Now, for more information, call 503-236-3065. Or go to pgw.info. If that went by too fast, just pull up kbu.fm and find my audio podcast, which we'll post after this show. Now, today, after a few more headlines, I am going to be talking with a journalist who has the skinny on the latest form of Big Brother. It ain't telescreens. It ain't big black marks in your newspapers. No, this is a new techno Big Brother. But first, a few more updates on Hurricane Ophelia. The Irish Independent said pictures from the Cleveleys, Lancashire, had showed an odd happening, an entire town covered in foam from the hurricane. Everything about Hurricane Ophelia seems unprecedented. Slate writes, even the Weather Channel seems to have the heebie-jeebies. They said only 15 hurricanes have passed within some 200 nautical miles of the Azores since 1851, according to NOAA's historical hurricane database. But for all its hair-raising attributes, they write, it's still too soon to tell what motivated Ophelia's unexpected path, though abnormally warm surface water temperatures and a tragically perfect jet stream definitely played major roles. This means that, like most of our unprecedented hurricanes this season, there is a real chance that climate change played a role, though unpacking how exactly strong that role was will take a bit more time. Whether Hurricane Ophelia proves to be a fluke or a new fixture of our climate-changed Earth, the fact is that it's forced forecasters to reconsider their maps. They had to redo their computers, and it's just another example of how extreme this hurricane season has been. According to the BBC, hundreds of thousands were without power in Ireland at one point last week, and three were killed by Hurricane Ophelia. Speaking of hurricanes, the Puerto Rico update from last month's Hurricane Maria. Miami Herald says the government says some 40 roads and 18 bridges remained out of commission in mid-October, and many of those are in the hard-to-reach Central Mountain Range, which has peaks near 3,400 feet and steep slopes of now flattened plantain fields. The entire region is without light or power, and people have been gathering water from the river and rainwater to wash clothes and flush their toilets. The government said that it hopes to have 95% of the power restored by December 15th, but it's likely that this sparsely populated region in the mountains will be in that last 5%, greeting the new year in the dark. From Project Censored, right-wing computer scientist and hedge fund billionaire Robert Mercer was a top donor to Donald Trump's presidential campaign, contributing $13.5 million and helping to lay the groundwork for what is now called the Trump Revolution. Mercer also funded Cambridge Analytica, a data analytics company that specializes in election management strategies and uses micro-targeting. As Carol Calwater reported for The Guardian in February 2017, Cambridge Analytica's website posts that it has psychological profiles based on the thousands of pieces of data for some 220 American voters. As Jane Mayer, another independent journalist, noted, Mercer, Cambridge Analytica, and others use these capacities to exploit a populist insurgency among voters and tip the election towards Trump. Right-wing websites are now dominating Google's search results on certain subjects. Maybe you've noticed this. Jonathan Albright, professor of communications at Allen University in North Carolina, mapped the news ecosystem and found millions of links to right-wing sites strangling the mainstream media. As The Guardian and The New Yorker reported, Albright has described Cambridge Analytica as a propaganda machine using trackers from sites like Breitbart to document people's web histories. your web history and target them with messages and advertisements via their Facebook accounts. More on this in a moment. From The Nation, the 400 richest Americans now have more wealth than the bottom 61% of the population. According to Billionaire Bonanza, the Forbes 400 and the rest of us, just 20 individuals at the top of the pile. A group that could fit into a Gulfstream G650 luxury jet could now actually control more wealth than the bottom half of the U.S. population. That's 152 million people living in 57 million households. Latest on North Korea from South China Morning Post. U.S. nuclear submarine is docked in South Korea, and the USS Ronald Reagan, along with its accompanying strike fleet, is about to start exercises, actually have started exercises Monday with South Korean Navy off the peninsula. A second aircraft carrier battle fleet centered on the USS Eisenhower has left San Diego for the Western Pacific. U.S. B-1 Lancer bombers again this week carried out training missions off the coast of Korea, and that would be provocation missions, pretending that they are practicing decapitation strikes. From Business Insider, the U.S. Navy maintains that the U.S. Michigan, a submarine known for carrying special ops teams, stopped in the South Korean city of Busan for a routine port visit, but pictures of the event suggest a more clandestine purpose that may involve U.S. Navy SEALs. On top of the Michigan, as it arrived in Busan, were two silos for SEAL delivery vehicles, the tiny submarines used to transport U.S. Navy SEALs. And again, this is about decapitation strikes or a direct threat against Kim Jong-un and his leadership. So having done with headlines, I hope to have a conversation with Julianne Tveten. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, who now joins me. Julianne, are you there?
Yes, hello.
You're a journalist writing for Current Affairs in These Times, Truth Out, and other major publications, and you got my attention writing about the internet. You write that the mainstream media message remains clear. Only the corporate-sponsored center can be trusted, but we're not talking about just a message from the mainstream here. We're talking about a new technique to restrict information. What's going on?
So first of all, thank you so much for having me on the show. So the article I wrote was about basically how the fake news scare is kind of suppressing dissent in media. The underlying thesis of it is that we don't exactly know what fake news means. We haven't really been given criteria that defines what fake news is. And so what it seems like it's developed into is somewhat of a conspiracy theory and window dressing for this idea that really sites like the Washington Post and the New York Times and corporate-sponsored sites that tend to dispense a lot of White House PR are the only sites that we can trust. And in the process, more left-leaning sites like Alternet and the World Socialist website, Democracy Now!, Common Dreams, et cetera, have seen their traffic decline. And so there is this kind of ongoing issue of how the fake news spectacle, which is primarily peddled by corporate Democrats, is kind of, again, shifting us into viewing corporate media as the only media that is trustworthy.
And they're doing it in a really sneaky way, and I want you to dial down on that, and you do in your article. I mean, what algorithms are being used to determine what is fake news? I noticed recently, over the last year, something very different is being done with my Facebook posts, especially when I post on certain categories of information, notably on whiteness, about the need to deconstruct and destroy whiteness, on imperialism, especially if I use the word imperialism. Is it just a matter of certain words or phrases? How are they doing this?
So one of the problems is that it's not very transparent to the public. After various technology companies like Google and Twitter and Facebook were, I guess, accused of contributing to fake news and disseminating fake news because they're essentially media monopolies, they began to implement various controls. So that means expanding fact-checking apparatuses, and that means allowing users to flag what they thought was fake news, and that means more human oversight with content moderation and deeming ads potentially misleading. So those are some of the controls and the incremental policies that these companies began to take. But the problem is, like I said, we don't really know what those algorithms are. And so that's resulted in, since Google updated its algorithms in April in response to these concerns that it was disseminating fake news, that's when various left-leaning websites, like the ones I mentioned, Common Dreams, Alternet, et cetera, began to see their traffic plummet. Meanwhile, the Washington Post, New York Times, et cetera, have not really seen anything near those drops. So this raises a big red flag. And I know you mentioned using Facebook and talking about white supremacy. And there have been a lot of issues with Facebook protecting the speech of white men specifically while banning black activists.
Black activists have been complaining about this for some time now, that they get banned altogether from Facebook or something happens to their posts.
Yep. Dita Delgado, who's a Black Lives Matter activist, was banned from Facebook for talking about how white people are racist and for rebuking white supremacy. And she eventually wrote an essay called Mark Zuckerberg Hates Black People. There have been reports from ProPublica that have shown that white men, the algorithms classify white men as a protected category, that's the term they use, while quote, subsets like black children and female drivers don't have those same protections. They're not protected from hate speech, and their own free speech is not protected to the degree that white men's is, because of the way these demographic groups are categorized. And so this translates clearly to a bunch of racist policies, and this translates to white men, even Nazis, having more protections on these platforms than groups that are actually vulnerable and are actually trying to raise awareness about extremely important issues.
Gee, what happens when you give the wealth of nations to an undergraduate and a pushy frat boy? Well, you wrote, the U.S. public has never quite learned the criteria of fake news, nor has it received a coherent, conclusive explanation of exactly what Russia did. But we now know that there was a minor, in terms of international intrigue, effort, a few tens of thousands spent on what Russian sources apparently thought was disruptive politics. I think you know what I'm talking about, and people who've been following this do, the supposed black sites that suddenly spent ad space praising Putin. And I recall Putin saying years ago, in light of the Ukraine machinations by the CIA and the National Endowment for Democracy, that ridiculously named group, that he should retaliate against the U.S. with the same sort of disruptive tactics and see how the U.S. liked it. Can you comment on that?
That, unfortunately, I'm not quite as familiar with. But I do know that I mean, one thing I wanted to say was that there, the concerns over specifically Russia are really a show of hypocrisy, because this is Congress is trying to intervene now in regulating the political ads that go on these platforms, specifically because they are concerned that these platforms are enabling Russian intervention and foreign manipulation of the American public. You know, the government has never really, to a meaningful degree, stepped in before to try to regulate when all of these issues of racism have been happening, when Facebook has allowed ads that circumvent the Fair Housing Act or fair employment legislation, that have allowed advertisers to customize which races they target, again, for housing ads or employment ads or for credit cards. And so the concerns about Putin's motives and concerns about Russia's involvement and tech companies enabling of Russia's involvement in or whatever that might mean in the election are just, yeah, there's such a show of hypocrisy. This really marks the first time that the government has actually stepped in and tried to regulate these companies when these companies have needed to be regulated.
And it's made to be such a big deal, existence. Like, you know, they threw the election with this, and I can't hang with that, because, I mean, obviously, if you follow Greg Palast, the Republicans through the election knew what they were doing and are set up to throw the next one with poll closures and denial of registration, et cetera, et cetera. And this thing, I mean, you can't overthrow the United States with this tiny little gesture. I mean, I saw those and I thought, well, that's odd, and so what? And they didn't affect my opinion.
Exactly.
Well, I've been doing, go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say, by comparison, yes, the accounts in question or the ads in question are just so minimal compared to the total number of accounts and ads that are on these platforms. And also, you mentioned Cambridge Analytica earlier. That is homegrown political advertising. So it's not the hysteria about Russia specifically is deeply unfounded.
Yeah, it's not Russia that gerrymandered districts into octopi and squid shapes.
No, it's not.
Well, I began doing this program decades ago during the Cold War, when it was impossible to carry on a conversation in public about, say, the relative moral difficulties of capitalism or whether the U.S. was imperialist at all. There was just such an incredible control over the minds. There was an unending chorus of condemnation against the socialist bloc on radio and television and newspapers, and I had hoped the advent of the internet would allow a greater opening for dissent, and maybe it has. But I can also see that there are new forms of manipulation and censorship available to our rulers. Instead of having holes cut out in our newspapers, we're electronically and instantaneously redirected from left opinion before we can blink or think or know that it was there. Do you have comments on that?
Yeah, I think just so much of this is rooted in the privatization of the internet, and the fact that most of the platforms we use, actually all of the platforms we use on a daily basis, but probably the top five websites, are all privately owned. They're all corporations: Facebook, Twitter, Google, etc. And they have profit motives. They have political motives. Facebook has spent tens of millions of dollars lobbying Congress in order to, I think, stave off regulation. And so the fact that we're seeing these left-leaning sites claiming that their search traffic is plummeting very much reveals that companies like Google, Facebook, and Twitter don't really have an interest in giving people ready access to sites that are going to speak out against corporate power and monopoly capitalism.
Well, it seems to me we're being diverted. You know, as the condition of the U.S. public declines year after year, it's surely becoming more important to control hearts and minds, you know, and to think in terms of, well, those Russians are out to get us, so that, you know, no revolt occurs against the Koch brothers and Zuckerberg class. When I entered the workforce as a grocery stocker in 1972, a common wage for such work for teenagers getting their first job was $5 an hour, which doesn't sound like much, but it translates, if you use an inflation calculator, to $29 an hour. And that sort of generalized prosperity back then meant that I never saw tent cities on the city sidewalks. And I want to talk with you about that. Do you think our masters fear we will demand a better deal? Is this where is this coming from? Is it just the corporations?
Where is what coming from? Could you elaborate?
Where is this scheme of changing algorithms so that Alternet gets downvoted and disappears when I share it on Facebook? This isn't just coming from Facebook.
I'm thinking,
for example, Project Censored says that the Pentagon paid a British PR firm $600 million to run a top secret propaganda program in Iraq. And they produce short TV segments made to appear like Arabic news stories and insurgent videos. That's how far they will go, for target populations. And obviously, we are now a target population.
So, this is not strictly coming from technology companies, because I think for the most part, technology companies will accept as many ads as possible, because that's what most of their revenue comes from. It's more engineered by the corporate leaning Democratic Party and pundits who are again suggesting that fake news and that Russian machinations are to blame. I get the impression that the fake news narrative and the Russiagate narrative are just kind of examples of horseshoe theory, which is the suggestion that left ideologies are no different from far right ideologies.
Horseshoe. Say it again. Horseshoe what?
Horseshoe theory. So imagine the shape of a horseshoe.
Okay.
The U shape, and it's imagine at the bottom curve is like centrist ideology, and then at each end is left ideology and far left ideology, far right ideology. It's basically a false equivalence theory, suggesting that the far left and the far right are equally damaging, and the only political ideology that can truly be trusted is centrist.
So conformity is good. You don't want to get too high up on either side of the horseshoe. I get it. Well,
exactly.
And in this context, conformity means conformity with a system that has utterly crushed the working and middle classes, the maldistribution of wealth being so extreme that we have half the population that is desperate. If one paycheck is missed, another near half that is really not all that far from that, and a fraction of 1% mm-hmm. with unimaginable wealth. And so if that's the system that we are to maintain, then, well, I'm here to call for revolution.
Me too.
I'm certainly glad to hear that. You're listening to Press Watch on KBOO Portland. You have a list in your article of how these algorithmic updates have changed the traffic. And if you don't have it right in front of you, and if you don't mind, I'll just read a couple of those sentences. The World Socialist website, you write, reports a 67% dip. And this article is in These Times, is that right?
Yeah.
67% dip in traffic between April and July of this year. Total decrease of 85% since Google implemented changes. And skipping ahead, Alternet and Global Research have issued additional laments, the former claiming to have lost an average of 1.2 million of the 2.7 million unique visitors the site receives from search traffic each month since June. So this really is left censorship. This really is quite having quite an effect.
Yes, it is. And I think one of the most disturbing things that I included in this article is what Eric Schmidt, the billionaire chairman of Google's parent company, Alphabet, said in an interview on Fox Business, which was that it should be possible for computers to basically detect fake news. And he said, we're not arguing for censorship, we're arguing just take it off the page. So he's suggesting that computers should have the ability to use artificial intelligence in order to detect, quote, fake news and remove it before anyone can see it. And this is like the logical conclusion, I think, of Google decreasing search traffic to more dissenting sites. The idea would be that private tech companies would be in charge of engineering technology and algorithms that would remove fake news before you even see it. So the question there is who is engineering this technology, and why should they be in charge of determining what news people should consume?
It has so many insidious effects. And one of the effects that I'm noticing is that there is a tremendous war buildup right now versus North Korea. And so I get on the air every week and say that, and I feel like voice in the wilderness. And it seems to me that if it were not for the constant pressure of the corporate media, which is so well connected and so profit-based with the Pentagon, people mm-hmm. will be in the streets screaming that they don't want a war with North Korea, which will be a horrendous disaster, not only in terms of lives lost and Korea disrupted. I mean, you ain't going to get your Samsung update if this goes on. But Trump will get everything he wants under an utterly fascist administration if he is able to push through this war. And we don't have that gestalt coming through because the left is being suppressed. And Julianne Tveitan, I thank you so much for joining me. we're getting ready for Per Fagering to come in and do his show. Thanks once again, Julianne Tveten. The article is in These Times. And I would also like to thank Rock, who is now ending his time as the engineer for this show. Rock has been absolutely the best. And I am just so grateful for what you have done, Rock, to help this be a good show. And you're listening to KBOO on 90.7 FM and other frequencies in Cascadia, and on KBOO.FM, going out to all the ships at sea.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Well, good morning. This is Fight the Empire. My name